You're listening to 15 Minutes with a Mensch.
Welcome to this episode of 15 Minutes with a Mensch. I'm your co-host, Sarah Greenwald. This episode, we're going to be talking to Martha Berg, archivist at Road of Shalom Congregation. I'm not sure if many of you know, but Road of Shalom Congregation not only has an archives, but they have an archivist, Martha Berg. So we took some time to sit down and chat with her about what that means and what the archives at Road of Shalom has. So welcome, Martha. This is really exciting. I haven't spoken to you in quite some time, so it's really wonderful to be able to take the time to sit down and share with our listeners more about what you do. So let's start with, how did you find yourself working at RODEF? So what is your journey here? Have you always been interested in history, archives, collections management?
It's a long story. I have had a number of other careers. I worked in family planning for a long time. I was an at-home mother. I've worked in libraries. But the way I got to archives was that years ago, I started doing historical research with a friend of mine from college. This is really years ago. And we had some unpleasant experiences with archivists who seemed to think that you had to be a university professor to be doing so-called serious research. And I remember thinking then, I could be a better archivist at being non-judgmental about who I'm to do research. And then years after that, I decided to go to graduate school and study archives management. That involved moving back to Pittsburgh, which is my hometown, and getting a master's degree at Pitt. It was then the library school. Now it's changed names a number of times. But and five days after that, after I graduated, Ann Malloy, who was the librarian here, hired me as the archivist. And that was 21 years ago yesterday.
So this is very fortuitous then.
Yeah. And it's always been a half-time job. So I've also had a number of other concurrent part-time jobs as I go along. I was the first archivist for the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra, which is, to me, a great accomplishment. I was just there a few hours a week. And now, because of what I started there, they have a full-time archivist, which I'm very proud of. And I've also worked at the Rao Jewish Archives at the Heinz History Center. And I've done some consulting for schools and organizations and families that want to preserve their own archives. So it's been an interesting career that I started late, and I just love it.
I really love how you sort of fell into the field unexpectedly. I think that happens a lot of times. There are many lives to our careers, I think. And I love how you found yours just sort of doing something with a friend that you thought was interesting. And it turned out that, you know, you could grow from there. And that's incredible. I had no idea that you also worked at the Rao Jewish Archives and were the first archivist for the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. That's incredible. Wow. So focusing on, I have so many questions that I could ask you, but I want to focus on Road of Shalom. So what do you do as an archivist at Road of Shalom?
Well, let me start with the mission of the archives, which is to collect, preserve, and make accessible the records of Road of Shalom congregation. So I work mainly with paper records, since that's what there is the most of here. And honestly, when I came, they were just in every nook and cranny of every closet in this building. So I still haven't caught up with that. Of course, we have a lot of digital records now, and that's kind of the next step, but I'm still working with photographs and documents. And archives work is very hands-on. It's very labor-intensive. I need to look at every single page to see if it's valuable, or if I decide it's valuable for historical purposes. So it's a lot of really understanding how the congregation works, how the pieces fit together, and then making assessments. And people might not know this, but a lot of what an archivist does is weeding, just getting rid of things that are extraneous, that are inappropriate to this archives, or that are duplicate materials. And that allows us to take up less space, for one thing, and also to see more clearly what there is that does have value. So that's part of it, the organizing. Then when we decide what we're going to save, I process it, put it in acid-free folders and boxes in our climate-controlled archive space, and then enter information about those records in a database so that I can find them when I need them for reference. And that's another side of my work is access, which is letting people know what information I have here. And it can be easy, or it can be kind of a needle in a haystack search, which can be kind of fun or kind of frustrating sometimes. So people who ask me for information, they range from congregants and former congregants who are working on their family history, to students working on high school or undergrad assignments, or scholars doing pretty high-level academic research, which is fascinating to help them with. I really like to be asked for information, even if it turns out I can't provide it in the end, but I'm really, really happy when I can connect someone with the information they're looking for. And then there's a third aspect of my work, which is writing articles and speaking to groups about the history of Rosh Shalom congregation. And that's a way of letting people know that we do have an archives and an archivist. And I can be a bit of a nervous speaker, but I really love to share the stories that I've gotten from doing research in our historical papers. And during the pandemic, I've been doing a fair amount of presenting on Zoom in our Pittsburgh Jewish History series and elsewhere, since it's been impossible to meet in person. And so that's another way of reaching out to people within and without the congregation, within and outside of the congregation, so more people know that we exist here.
So this actually brings up a question that I just thought of. So you worked at the Rao Jewish Archives. Rosh Shalom congregation has its separate archives. I assume, but I guess the question is, there must be some sort of interaction if someone comes to you and wants information that either isn't within the purview of the collection at Rosh Shalom, or maybe they want more information than what is in our archives here. I assume there's a, you send them over to the Rao, and the Rao sends them like a sort of communication between the two.
Exactly. I have a really good working relationship with Eric Legie, who's the director of the Rao Jewish Archives. He worked with our archives here when he wrote a book about Rabbi Jacob. So, and I've worked with him on other projects before, and we work together really well. So I collect only officially institutional records. That means things that have to do with the way Rosh Shalom congregation works. I don't collect family papers, except of the rabbis, and sometimes some family related materials that have to do with maybe a board president or somebody like that, or things that have just fallen here that don't fit with the Rao collections either. But there is an overlap. But the Rao Jewish Archives collects family records and business records and institutional records of institutions that no longer exist. So we handle the overlap really nicely just by referring people back and forth. It works out very well.
Well, that's great. I'm very pleased and honestly proud that Pittsburgh has not only the Rao Jewish Archives for the entire community here regionally, but also that Rosh Shalom has an institutional memory in the archives. I think that's very important.
And it's very unusual for a single congregation to have a professional archivist, even on a half-time basis. It's just, in any religion, it's just not.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that we do it. So I guess this is a question that is a good follow-up. How can, or I don't know, how do people contribute to the ongoing preservation of Rosh Shalom congregational life, if they, because you said that the archives focuses on institutional records. I'm assuming people come to you with, I could see boxes of things that may or may not be related to that. If somebody does have a box of stuff that they think is related to Rosh Shalom congregational life or the institution, what happens?
Well, the first thing I fervently hope is a phone call or an email to me saying, I have good stuff. Are you interested in it? I do not particularly like what I call drive-bys. a specialist archives term, which means somebody just dropping off boxes of stuff without even a note saying where they came from. That's happened to me quite a lot. So please, please, please contact me in advance if you have materials, anybody who has materials. But I am really interested. I want to be contacted because sometimes those materials are really, really valuable and fill out part of the institutional history. So I often get calls when people are downsizing, they're cleaning out their basements or their attics, and they say, I wonder if this is useful. My father was, you know, the president, or my mother was really involved in sisterhood. Or I did a project recently researching Rabbi Friedhoff's wife, Lillian Friedhoff, for an essay I wrote for the Jewish Women's Archives online. And a big part of what she contributed to the community was the Braille program. And there are a lot of people whose mothers or aunts or grandmothers were volunteer Braille transcribers at home because they were trained by Lillian Friedhoff to do that and to create Braille books specifically to meet the needs of people who had visual impairments. So sometimes people who find those records in their family papers, and they'll call me and say, are you interested? And yes, I am, because that really fills out the picture. So that's one thing people can do. And I'm really always interested in photographs as well, but they need to be identifiable by date, at least approximately, and preferably to have the people in them identified pretty completely. Because a box of photographs with no identification and no idea when they were taken or why isn't useful to the archives at all. So
yeah. I love your term drive-by. I was thinking a drop-off, just like drop it off. It's both, but okay. So for anyone out there listening, call or email first. Martha is part-time, so she's not always in the office. And if you have any idea of the scope, so, you know, how the dates of what you were bringing or the people involved, please let her know. Yeah. So speaking of all these pieces of information, I'm really interested because I've worked with you prior for some JJEB classes and pulling out some historical images of RODEP. And I'm interested in RODEP's history, but I want to know from you, what is your favorite piece of that history that's in the archives? Do you have something that you think is like a special treasure, or you just were really interested in it and think that it's really cool?
Let me give two answers to that. People who know me know that I'm interested in anything to do with Rabbi J. Leonard Levy. He's my favorite rabbi who ever worked here. And I actually read his sermons on my lunch hour and that sort of thing. He wasn't a perfect human being. I've become more aware the more I learn about him. But he was here from 1901 to 1917, and he was very dynamic and very active in social justice movements of his time. And that just really appeals to me. So anything about him is always of interest to me. But there is also a quirky little thing I would like to share. A number of years ago, Dave Seske showed me a signature scrawled in a grease pencil on the inside wall of the reading desk on the Bima. It's not there anymore, but I have a picture of it. It was a man's signature and Batavia, New York, and a date during the time the sanctuary was being built. And the archives connection is that, as it happens, I do have in the archives a lot of bills from the original building of the sanctuary. So I have an invoice from a woodworking company in Batavia, New York, from around that same date. So I just love the human connection there. There's an otherwise completely unknown to us worker who signed his work in a virtually inaccessible place, but he signed, he was there. And we're still using that desk today, 115 years later. I just really like the human part of that.
That is incredible when you think about it. Yeah, because you have the financial record, which is very sort of cut and dry. But then to find something personal, and you wouldn't think, you know, these craftsmen at the time, you wouldn't think, oh, they're not fine artists. They're not, you know, they're not signing a painting, but to have pride in what you did to sign that, that's really incredible. And what a neat I had no idea that that existed. That's so interesting. Yeah. Oh, wow. So we're going to have to wrap it up here because this is 15 minutes with a mensch and not 2 hours talking to Martha Berg about every question I have. So is there anything else that you want to share with our listeners or tell our audience?
Maybe just one thing. A lot of archivists work in institutions where the people whose papers they're organizing are long gone, or organizations have been disbanded or otherwise defunct. But I really, really have enjoyed working as the archivist for a living congregation. It's a place where I have a special historical vantage point from going over the records in all these years. And I can see trends and patterns in congregational activities that repeat themselves each generation. It's really very interesting. And then I hope that I can be actively involved to just sort of interject an historical perspective on what's happening here now. So it's a nice interaction between history and current activities. And I really love that. It makes me feel like I'm part of the congregation's activities now, even though what I mainly do is study their past.
That is really beautiful. When you think about it, you're right. I hadn't thought, but most archivists are dealing with a past that is no longer living. But yeah, you're really in this unique position to sort of bridge that gap for us between the past that, quite frankly, I'm sure on the day-to-day interactions with the congregation, we don't really think of, but it's good that you're there. Yeah, to sort of say, hey, you know, remember this, or let's not forget a couple of generations this happened. Yeah. Wow. Well, I've so enjoyed speaking with you, and I could go on, but I just really appreciate you sharing with us more about what you do and the archives and what's there. And I want to thank you, and I will make sure our listeners know that I'll make sure that they have your email/phone number if they want to get in touch with any sort of records or questions that they have. So thank you, Martha.
Thank you so much, Sarah. I'm really honored to be asked, and it's really been fun talking to you.
"15 Minutes with a Mensch" is a podcast supported by the Prayer, Practice, and Learning Committee of Deaf Shalom Congregation in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. For more information on upcoming events or how you can get involved, visit our website at www.rodefshalom.org. I'm Bill Battistone.
And I'm Sarah Greenwald.